the Agile brand.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast, now part of the Agile Brand Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I am so glad you're here. I empower leaders to delight their customers, and I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights, wisdom, and practical tips that you can use immediately. I'm also excited to announce the Trusted Guide Roadmap Masterclass for CX leaders who struggle with executive buy-in and are ready to go beyond CX fundamentals. The masterclass gives you proven frameworks and takes you step by step through a four-step model that will move you past the frustration of not getting your work done. It's unique because it's live, interpersonal, hands-on, and we give you tools and templates to help you build your CX roadmap. To learn more, visit empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. And now, on to the show. Well, I am so excited to have my guest on the show today, Eric Smuda. Eric has a deep-rooted background in customer experience going back to HP, where he was a director of customer satisfaction measurement way before we even really called it CX, and built out the VOC program for Hewlett-Packard. Then he was involved in and out of his career in consulting roles, and then was a VP of customer insights and experience at Avis Budget. And then he went over from Avis to Hertz, and was VP of customer experience and loyalty there, head of their entire Voice of the Customer program. Then he moved on to most of us in the industry are very familiar with InMoment, where he was a principal and head of CX strategy there until he moved to his current role where he is a chief experience officer at Likewise. So Eric, welcome to the show.
Mark, glad to be here. You've had a distinguished list of participants, and I'm honored to be included in that list.
And you 100% are distinguished, and I'm honored to have you on the show. Fill in any blanks that I may have missed or butchered up on your background, and also share what you're doing now.
Sure, absolutely. You know, as you said, I've been in CX a long time, longer than we've called it CX in this little cottage industry. I was a research brat, and so I grew up out of the market research world, and that got me into the VOC world. I was an early bandwagon adopter of NPS. Part of the consulting work that you mentioned earlier was with Intuit when they were one of the early adopters of NPS. So I've been part of that bandwagon really since the beginning and part of the NPS forum. You mentioned the Avis and Hertz roles. I think, you know, what's unique there, especially in the Hertz case, was running CX, CRM, and loyalty. And so that CRM piece was important because I fundamentally believe, hey, communication is as big a part of CX as the actual delivery of the product or service as well. As you mentioned, I'm now the CXO at Likewise. We're a global leader in technology protection. So what that really means, you know, whether it's insurance, whether warranty or repairs to trade in, recycling, premium tech support, our goal is really to make every tech problem for a customer painless.
Nice. So give us an idea of Likewise, kind of size, structure, locations.
Yeah. So $2.5 billion dollar company, 2,000 employees worldwide. What's unique about us, and all of your audience has never heard of us, because we're really not a consumer facing organization. So we are the insurance company or the repair company behind things like AppleCare or a Costco extended warranty and things like that. So when consumers need help, they come to us, but they wouldn't necessarily know our name and seek us out as the first point of contact.
And Eric, tell us what they brought you in for. Was there previously someone in your role?
There was. I do have a predecessor. He, while he had the same title, his role was much more focused on call center operations. And so as we discussed this role, we really said, hey, there's more to CX than just the call center. Obviously, it's a critical piece and always will be a critical piece, but really thinking about, you know, what does end-to-end CX look like? What does the digital experience look like? What does the product experience look like? In our case, because we're a B2B company that also services their consumers, what does B2B relationship customer experience look like? So, you know, that's really my charter is to help drive growth for the company. I've been a longtime believer that organic growth is the best way to grow a company, and customer experience is how you drive that. So, you know, that's really my charter here.
Well, that's a great point to click in on and segue. One of the things that you said that caught my attention, actually made me smile last time we were speaking, was this quote, which is, if CX is not your growth engine, is not the growth engine for your company, what are you doing? So I'd like you to elaborate on that. I thought it was pithy.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad it resonated with you. You know, like I said a minute ago, I have always had a fundamental belief that organic growth is the best way or the most profitable way to grow your business. That's not to say there's not room for M&A, and of course that's important in certain cases, but you know, if you look at the profitability of where growth comes from, organic growth comes from there. And so, you know, one of my other fundamental beliefs in the CX world is good CX is really the combination of what's good for the business and what's good for the customer. And so if it's not good for the business, if it's not helping drive growth, if it's not helping you acquire customers or retain more customers or sell more to those customers, you know, you're barking up the tree or the wrong tree.
Yeah. And I, you know, I love that coupling of customer and company. And it reminds me of one of my early learnings from doing this podcast. I had a guest on the show, Dr. Peter Fader from the Wharton School. He wrote a book called The Customer Base, not based, but Customer Base Audit. And in other words, the health of your customer base. And one of the things he talks about is don't treat all customers the same, which is really having a grasp of which customers and customer types drive the most, you know, return or revenue back to the business, kind of revenue you a company might desire, and really understanding those customers, and then focusing your attention and effort on designing and delivering the experience based on those customers. Is that close to your thinking about, you know, what's good for the customer, what's good for the company, or were you thinking about something different?
I probably thought about it more broadly than Dr. Fader, but certainly familiar with his work, and I certainly agree with that notion. I think a lot of companies get in trouble by not doing that segmentation or not having the understanding of who are our most profitable customers or who do we want to be our most profitable customers. And the flip side, who are our unprofitable customers, and is there the right time and the right situation to say goodbye to some customers that, you know, just aren't the right fit for you or are causing, you know, issues in your experience or causing issues with profitability, to say, you know what, maybe this isn't the right fit and let's focus our time, attention, and energy on those that we believe are our target customers and the experience that we want to deliver there.
So, Eric, the customer base that you have is B2B, or you're B2B to C. Do you do any B2C at all?
Not directly, no. So our charter, right, if you think about our market, it's the telcos or the carriers in the telco space. It's big box retailers like a Costco or a Best Buy or something like that. It's banks. You know, particularly because extended warranties and things like that are often benefits of premium credit card companies. And so what we're doing is taking care of their subscribers or their members or their clients, as it may be. So, you know, so we do take care of B2B to C, but we don't have a direct B2C business.
Okay.
Probably won't for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I asked there is it's not that uncommon for like insurance warranty companies and other companies in other industries to have this channel conflict which creates some mistrust. So it's it's smart if it's not on the charter to go into that channel.
Right, right. No, you're absolutely right. And in fact, we're working on some new innovations that you might say, hey, why aren't you taking that direct to consumer? But to your point, both to avoid the channel conflict of competing with our own clients, and B, it's expensive to launch new consumer products, you know, as you try and build awareness and, you know, put marketing dollars behind that. And so while we will continue to develop those types of products, we will still use our clients and those channels to sell them.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because your customers sell to consumers. One of the challenges that I have heard from companies sort of in the middle, like you are, is a complaint. And you tell me if this is true for likewise. If it's likewise, that they don't have visibility to end user data. They don't, because it's controlled by, you know, the customer, let's just say it's Best Buy, and they don't want you to see, or they're not willing to let you see. Is that a phenomenon?
It certainly exists, but I think we've done a good job of developing those partnerships. And look, the reality is, because we're an insurance company and a repair company, they have to provide a certain level of customer information for us to be able to provide the best service for them. Right? I mean, part of our job is to make them look good.
Yeah, right.
And so as you think about that B2B2C relationship, the better job we do taking care of their clients or their customers or their members reflects positively on their brand just as much as it reflects positively on our brand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that's logic, but sometimes like giving up customer, you know, feedback data to, you know, going upstream is something that's not always so common. So you're getting what you need to design and deliver experiences like you'd like.
We are. I mean, and part of the relationship we have with our clients, or most of our clients, is we actually do the customer feedback work at the end of a claim process or an interaction. And so while we certainly share that with our clients, you know, on a regular basis, we also have access to it as well so that we can understand what we need to do better to you know, improve our service as well as improve our service for their customers.
So thanks, Eric. So there are some people that are in somewhat of a similar position to you, maybe not in your industry, but they're stepping into a CX role that may have not been developed at all, may have not been developed as broadly, and they're given the mission to go ahead and embed CX into the culture, or you know, build a framework for ongoing operationalizing CX in the organization. What guidance would you, is that fair to say that's where you stepped in, and what guidance would you have? Or let's back up a step. What are some of the challenges that you faced when you first arrived?
Yeah, I think everything embedded in your question is fair and part of my charter. I think some of the challenges I faced is, as you say, a lack of understanding or a lack of segmentation. Some of what we're trying to do culturally is get the organization to recognize, yes, we are in charge of taking care of our clients' customers, but we're also in charge of taking care of our clients, right? And so getting that kind of split mental focus on having a B2B focus as well as a B2B2C focus, and getting the organization to understand, you know, back to my original philosophy, if organic growth is the best way to grow a company, do we also understand our clients' needs and why they might want to do business with us and why they might want to continue to do business with us, so that we're being a better partner to them and they may give us more opportunity as well? So I think that's one of the big challenges. I think, you know, in our case, we get customer feedback at the end of a claim process, but there's other touch points in the journey, both from a B2B standpoint and a B2C standpoint, where we could do a better job of capturing feedback and really understanding customer needs and wants and expectations, and how do we drive change there. you know, thankfully I walked into a company that is very consumer focused or customer focused. So that's, you know, culturally, that's not really an issue, but it's more, how do you marshal that? How do you channel that? How do you put some governance around it so that it's not, you know, how do you get the puppies in the box, right? A little bit and get them organized and focused the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So, to that point, as you start to get the feedback that you're hoping to get and the data you're looking for, and you want to turn those insights into action, like what internal structures do you have in place for that decision-making and to turn those insights into action?
Yeah, well, one of the first things I've stood up already is a customer experience governance council. I'm just a huge believer in that, you know, and what that means for your audience. Obviously, much of your audience will know that, but, you know, what we've tried to do is stand up all of those that have key revenue and profitability targets in the company, as well as those who manage each of the customer touch points in the company. So our general managers from around the business and around our regions, our call center owners, our, you know, digital team, our account management teams, our sales teams, get them all around the table once a month and say, okay, here's what we know today. What are what are each of the channels hearing? Let's prioritize what we're going to work on. Let's charter those teams. Let's make sure that they have the budget and the resources that they need and bring them back to this body on a monthly basis to track progress, right? And clear barriers and roadblocks and things like that. But rather than each part of the business trying to work on things themselves, let's take a systems approach, systems thinking approach to this and really think about how do we optimize this and make sure that we have cross-silo visibility to what people are doing.
Excellent. Yeah. So let me just back up a step as I'm thinking about what someone listening may be wondering. 2,000 people in the organization, B2B, you're the CXO. So do you report directly to the CEO?
I do.
And how many other executives are there?
I'd have to count, but call it 12 to 15.
12 to 15. Okay. So that's a pretty good size executive team for, I guess, a 2,000 person organization.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, certainly it is.
Well, I'm glad a CXO is one that has a seat at the table, but what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say to your earlier question, how do you get started in this role? Part of it is building a relationship with those peers and understanding their business and understanding their goals and objectives and understanding, okay, what role can I play in helping them meet their goals and objectives? And so building those relationships and having an understanding of what they're trying to accomplish and how you can fit in and play a role in helping them and the business overall achieve their goals is important, right? CX can't be its own separate initiative on the side. It has to be integrated into how you run the business.
Yeah. Yeah. What, 100% agree. What kind of reception, friction are you getting from your peers?
I would say the reception has been great, right? People know that the role is needed. People know, you know, they all have their own ideas on what should we push forward, right? Our business in Europe is more digitally focused than our business in North America is. And so, okay, how do I help them achieve their goals versus, you know, a different geography or a different business unit that has different priorities. But, the reception has been warm and I'm certainly thankful to be here, but understanding those nuances and then having a cross executive team council, as I said, you know, to prioritize, hey, what are we going to work on? And to your point earlier, let's work on the things that are going to have the highest impact on our customer base and our business.
Yeah. And let me double tap on something you said, so that the audience doesn't miss it, I would call it a gem, which you rolled through pretty quickly. So I want to go back to it because that's part of my job is that the guests have a tremendous amount of knowledge about something and sometimes they float through it pretty quick. And I want to make sure it may be something obvious, but just in case Eric was talking about building relationships with his peers, and he talked about the importance of, I guess I'm paraphrasing here, CX. It needs to be not done in a vacuum, but it needs to go across the organizational departments, areas, whatever. And in order to do that, you've got to build relationships with your peers. And one of the things that you're doing, which is something I teach in the course, that Trusted God Roadmap course, in that section of it, is how do you develop relationships with key stakeholders? It's to understand what their goals are and understand what their needs are, rather than just coming in and saying, hey, Joanne, we've got this report back on what customers are complaining about, and you know, we need to fix this, and I need your help.
Right.
You know. Right. So you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, look, and you're right. I think the CXO role is a difficult one, because you're there to enable the rest of the organization. You're also there to enable, you know, to shine the spotlight on the dirty corners and the things that do need to get fixed. But I think the only way you can do that effectively is to build those relationships, understand what they're trying to achieve. More importantly, understand how the business works. How does the business actually make money? And I think a lot of CX teams don't do that well, right? They collect data, they analyze data, and they throw it over the fence, but they don't really understand how a company makes money on it. And I'll give you a great example from my rental car days, you know, because as a consumer, you think, hey, this isn't too bad, right? I rent a car, I turn it in, somebody vacuums it, runs it through the car wash, and gives it to somebody else. And obviously, there's many, many more moving parts behind the curtain that consumers don't see there. But if you look at the totality of, say, Avis's business or Hertz's business, right, they do more tire changes than any of the retail tire companies out there. They do more oil changes than Jiffy Lube. Because they're self-insured companies, they're probably top 10 insurers in the country, and people don't know that. They sell more used cars than anybody in the world. And so when you start thinking about, hey, is this really a consumer rental car company or is it something else? In a good used car market, the rental car companies will make far more money buying the cars and selling them back into the used car market than they ever do renting cars. And so when you start to understand, okay, how does the company really make money? Where should my priorities be? You know, it changes your focus. And so I would say to any of the CXOs out there or the CX teams out there, really understand your business, understand how the company operates, understand how the company makes money, because now you can have a peer-to-peer conversation with the person that you're talking about and say, okay, I do understand your business. I do understand what you're trying to accomplish. I do understand the complications that are there. So let's talk about how we can make this better.
Just another great gem. Understand how your business makes money and how that works. So great example and a great segue to the next question I have, which is, you know, how can CX leaders tie back to these ROI levers? And so, you know, there are things like customer acquisition and things like revenue and customer retention. Talk some more about how that works in your mind.
Yeah. Look, this is the holy grail conversation in the CX industry, right? How do you prove an ROI? And you know, you and I have been part of many forums. Well, why do I have to? And all of these other things. Well, and we can go there if you want to. But I've always thought about proving CX or the ROI of CX in four ways, right? There's customer acquisition. Am I bringing more in the door than I'm losing out the bottom of the leaky bucket. Customer retention, and every CFO in the world knows what a point of retention is worth. Driving lifetime value. So am I selling more things or am I selling new things to those customers while I'm keeping them longer? And then the fourth is really, am I lowering the cost to serve? So whether that's operational cost, whether that's marketing cost, whatever that might be, looking at those four levers. And I think a lot of CX teams get in trouble because they try and boil the ocean. and they try and collect all of these moving parts and build these fantastic, wonderful spreadsheets. And they get lost in the minutia and the assumptions, right? And I'm just a big fan of, hey, keep it simple, right? Keep it simple, partner with your finance team and look at, are there metrics that you can take credit for moving, right? So, you know, if you're working on digital CX, have I changed our conversion rate, right? Mm. Have I decreased our abandon rate on the website? Have I, helped increase our average cart size if you're in a consumer business, right? In the retention world, obviously we talked about a point of churn and what that's worth, but have I increased customer tenure by half a year or 2 years, whatever that might be, right? So find those smaller level metrics and say, what impact have we had here? Now, look, you can't take 100% of the credit for that, right? One of the other unique things about us as CX leaders is you have to be able to subordinate your ego and you have to let the business shine first. But sure, the digital team's going to claim, hey, look what we did to the conversion rate or look what we did to the abandonment rate. That's fine. Let them have the credit. But you can also point to your ROI there and say, hey, we helped the digital team do this. Here's what this is worth to the company. Mm-hmm. Harry Truman had a great quote about, and I'll butcher the quote a little bit. People can look it up, but, imagine the great things that can get done if you stop worrying about who gets the credit. And that's just such a great quote for CX leaders, because you have to be willing to, once a project's done and everybody's celebrating success, you have to be willing to take that step backwards and let someone else have the spotlight there.
Yeah, to 100% agree. And I would broaden that even to say not even once a project's done, but on the front end of that, when you're working with your stakeholders, whether business unit leaders or whatever, be the guide, not the hero. That goes back to the story brand piece where, every story, according to Donald Miller, has a hero, a guide, a victim, and a villain. And the mistake that many of us make for a variety of reasons is we step into the hero's shoes, and maybe it is not subordinating your ego, or maybe the fear of, we do have to depend on everyone else. And so we're trying so hard that we want to take credit. And the reality is, going back to what we talked about earlier about understanding their goals and spending time learning about them, showing them that you care about them, that you understand their business. That's all about guide mentality versus hero mentality, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know that's a big part of your consulting work and teaching. And I love that framework that you use, because it is spot on for CX leaders.
Eric, tell me, you've had such great experience, and I know we're going to have to land the plane soon, but I want to hear, you worked at HP, you worked at Hertz, you worked at Avis, you worked at Moment, which is a survey management platform company. What are some of, if you point back, to maybe it's the auto industry, what's one of the biggest lessons that you learn as it connects to CX?
Well, I think one we already hit on, right, which is understand how the company makes money and really operates.
Yeah.
One of the things I did early in my tenure there, and then I enforced with my team as I hired people or people came in and out of my team, was go spend a week in one of our major locations. So I happened to choose DFW Airport, but go do every job in that location. Go understand, right, really how this business works. And so, because, back to the point about building relationships, having credibility, that's where it goes. I think from a learning standpoint, it still ultimately comes back to, do you know the business? Do you have the relationships? Do you understand how the company makes money? To your point early in the conversation, do you understand the segmentation of who are your most profitable customers and why? Those are the macro learnings for me. I think the other one for CX leaders is learn how to fail. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Right. So test and learn. Sometimes you learn, sometimes you win, but test and learn.
So I, as we're talking here, going back to, I'm thinking about career paths, and this could be true for other professions as well, but I've got this voice in my head based on some people I'm mentoring and some coaching clients and some even people have taken the course. They have an issue as a CX leader, not having a seat at the table, the executive table. And they'll say, well, yeah, it's easy for Eric to say, you know, he's a CXO. What do you say to those people who are whatever mid-career and they feel like, you know, they're just too far down the organizational chain, or, you know, they're just feeling like if they were the CXO, everything would be rainbows and unicorns. What would you say to those people?
Well, I think we've said it to some extent, right? Learn the business, build the relationships. And then the third thing I would add is speak the language of those leaders. Hmm. Right? Too many CX teams are talking about CSAT and NPS and response rates and things like that. No. Talk about dollars, talk about revenue, talk about profitability, talk about conversion rates or things that make them money. You have to speak the language of the business and you have to speak the language of the leaders, not these CX-y things that we in this insular industry like to talk about.
Yeah. And again, probably going back to, you know, ego, insecurities. You know, there's a reason why we can't tend to lean on, well, our NPS went up, you know, 5 points, our CSAT is down 3. We did a journey mapping workshop and we found this out and that this is the key touch point. And these are the, you know, it makes sense. It is part of the path to getting there. But I wrote recently about this idea of enablers versus outcomes. And those are all important. They're enablers, but they're not the language, to your point. Another gem, by the way, to your point, is speak the language of the C-suite.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And look, in my career, I mean, you know, I didn't start out as the CXO. Mm-hmm. I've been there mid-career, right? But I've never, in my entire career, I've never had a business executive tell me no when I've expressed interest in learning more about their business. Mm. Right. So go express that interest. Like I said, I went and washed cars. I went and vacuumed cars, you know, drove them around the parking lot to get them in the right place. If you express that interest with a business leader around, I want to know more about the business. I want to help you. 95, 98, 99% of the time, they're going to say yes. They want the help. Right. And, yeah, and they're invested in people that are invested in the business. So make yourself invaluable, build your relationships, demonstrate that you care about the business and not just what's our NPS score today and, you know, what was the latest verbatim that came in. So that would be my advice.
Great advice. Well, great. So many gems, great advice and wisdom from someone who's been there, done that, and still doing it at a high level. Eric, one last question for you. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
a couple of things. You know, one is don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. Two for me is don't be in such a hurry. Enjoy the journey and stop and smell the roses along the journey, right? Because your career really is not a destination-driven thing. Yes, we all want to make enough money to be able to retire someday, but enjoy the journey along the way as well. And then I think the other thing that we already talked about, follow the money, learn how the business works.
Mm. Yeah. Great advice. Eric, so grateful to have you on the show. If guests would like to reach out to you to get a hold of you, what would be the best way?
Yeah, but LinkedIn's probably the best way. Mm-hmm. I'm out there, and like you, I've got a newsletter as well called Transformational CX. So check that out if you're interested, and subscribe if you're interested. But very honored to be part of this today, and thankful to you for including me.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much, Eric. Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content. I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those at my website at empoweredcx.com. That's empoweredcx.com. Also, make sure to check out the other shows in the Agile Brand Podcast Network by going to www.agilebrandguide.com. The Delighted Customers Podcast with Mark Slayton is produced by Missing Link, a Latina-owned, strategy-driven, creatively-fueled production co-op. From ideation to creation, they craft human connections through intelligent, engaging, and informative content.
The Agile Brand.